Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore! It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
All right, welcome. The lights came on Barstool. Episode... I just had it up and I closed it. Episode 85.
782. It's close.
What is it total if we combine everything we've done since August of 2017? I don't know. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Chris, Gooch, coming at you. Creed 3. Creed 3, but also Mando and also a pretty big Last of Us episode. Which I don't – seems like we'll have positive sentiment at least in for the most part on all three. And an interview with Matt Shackman, who just directed, executive produced that brand new show, The Consultant, with Christoph Waltz. Also going to be doing the Fantastic Four movie. We talked to him. He couldn't say anything about that. Just letting you know.
Zilch.
Just for the sake of that.
He didn't bring up how Bill Hader got cast?
Wouldn't bring up anything.
So we'll get to that. We'll talk about that. But yeah, pretty jam packed. It's nice. It's nice when the stuff you watch is good, as opposed to when it's not good. Actually, sometimes I like when it's really bad. It's good when it's not mediocre and a waste of time.
Like She-Hulk.
She-Hulk.
Had enough to keep you but it was enough to keep you fun, entertained. Gooch.
All the things I'm talking about predate Gooch era. Like, I'm talking about movies that we would review a trill. It would be a fucking chore. And we don't really do those as much anymore, which I'm glad. Because, like, we still review bad movies, but we don't do, like, the... Now I said I feel pretty.
The Christmas wish or whatever. Bullshit like that.
Yeah, like, we stopped doing stuff that was so uninteresting that it made us not want to do anything.
Wrong, Missy.
Wrong Missy, great example.
Wrong Missy's pretty close, yeah.
That was a weird one though, because that was like 2 weeks into the pandemic or something, where it's like, what the fuck can we find on streaming on this?
Seriously, scroll,
dude. The Demi had us thinking Tiger King was like a work of art, like a game changer for TV, and like
that, it truly.
If that comes out 2 months before, it probably gets like a little bit of a pop, but it's nowhere near like.
It gets a standard Netflix pop. It doesn't get.
It sure as fuck doesn't get a second season.
No,
yeah. or a spin-off, or like a fictional show.
Two series, yeah. Two different ones, right?
Oh yeah, that's right.
One had Kate McKinnon, and the other one had I can't remember who. Nick Cage.
One of them got canceled, right?
Yeah,
I think one of them got just finished. They're just like, no, this is actually really sucks and is bad to do this late.
I'm gonna scroll back. I'm going to find a good example.
What did the Tiger King say? This is going to bankrupt me. What is he?
Recover from this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are his sayings?
Watch the movie.
Carol Baskins.
Carol fucking Baskins.
That bitch, Carol Baskins.
I knew he had a saying.
Anyway, I'll find a good movie as an example. Before we get into, I guess we'll probably start with Mando because I feel like Last of Us was heavy. And Last of Us was a pretty crazy episode. I saw Kevin Feige at Disneyland the other day. I walked right by him, and my sick, twisted brain just assumed it was a cosplay. I was like, God, that guy I was like, that guy crushed his Kevin Feige. And then he kind of turned, and I'm like, he's shorter than I thought he was. And I was like, huh. And then I look at it, he's got a Secret Invasion hat, and it says cast and crew. I was like, oh, fuck. Like, holy shit, he was going to the fancy club in Disneyland. And yeah, I saw Kevin Feige. And then a couple people around me realized who it was, and they were starting to freak the fuck out. But that was like, oh, shit. But yeah, I thought it was an immediate cosplay. It's like, oh, sick Kevin Feige. Very cool.
Yeah.
Do you think Feige or Iger ever just go down to the park and just like, can I cut in line and ride of the Banshee?
I mean, he was not with security or VIP or anything. He was just with his family. So I guess but I think he was going to dinner or something. I don't know. I mean, I assume they all work in that area. That was pretty crazy. It's like those are the people who get me. It's like, I don't know, if like Eddie Murphy walked through, and there's a reason I bring up Eddie Murphy, because we're about to talk about the Haunted Mansion trailer. Eddie Murphy would be like, Eddie Murphy. It's like, of course he's here for something. But like Kevin Feige, it's so like weird. I don't know. It's like it's so
there's
like
something. Odd. There's something so bizarre about just how everyman he is. Like he doesn't. Yeah. He gives off absolutely zero indication. If you didn't know about his past, he gives off zero indication that he's like a mover and shaker in Hollywood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, the fact that so I feel like seeing him in person, it's like, well, you're one of us. Like that's cool.
He's the hat guy. He wears and he was wearing that's the thing too. If he'd been wearing like a Titleist hat, I'd have been eh. The fact that he was wearing like one of the cast and like. Like, what was the process that day for picking out that specific hat? Like, why Secret Invasion? It just, a lot of questions going through my head.
Let's talk about Manscaped. Manscaped has the full package you need for spring cleaning this year. The Performance Package 4.0. It's the only tool that you need to help keep your boys looking and smelling fresh. To start off, your spring cleaning anyway, use the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer to get the most precise shave on your hedges. I like how they say hedges. That's actually really smart instead of pubes. Although I just said pubes, so I guess I kind of ruined it. Clear your holes and smell the spring air with the Weed Whacker. This nose and ear and air and hair trimmer helps with the proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. After clearing your nose, make sure to get rid of all that foul ball smell with the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. The Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner for your balls. Keep your boys from sticking to your leg and leave them smelling like fresh flowers. Finish your grooming routine with the Plow 2.0. It's the perfect razor for the finest shave on your face. Because you're using the Lawnmower 4.0 on your balls and your face, you're doing it wrong, boys. Start of spring also marks the start of Testicular Cancer Awareness Month in April. Manscaped has partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to bring awareness to testicular cancer, men's health, and early cancer detection. Manscaped is committed to raising the awareness for the most common form of cancer in men aged 15 to 35 and for giving support for fighters, survivors, and families impacted by testicular cancer as part of their We Save Balls initiative. Save 20% off and get free shipping with the code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. It's time to throw out your old hygiene habits and upgrade your life.
But we have some news. We'll start off with the Disney one. Haunted Mansion trailer. There is a new Haunted Mansion movie coming out based off the ride Haunted Mansion, which has been at Disney for decades, one of the oldest rides. There was a movie that came out in 2003 starring Eddie Murphy, also Wallace Shawn, one of Ken Jack's favorite actors.
Oh, yeah.
The legend.
Oh, yeah. Best voice.
This is not that. That was like a kid's goofy movie. This seems like it's tough to tell on a teaser because teaser trailers don't always give off the vibe. This seems like a little more adulty, a little more like leaning into the horror. It's got a pretty cool cast. Lakeith Stanfield, Rosario Dawson, Owen Wilson, Tiffany Haddish, Danny DeVito. So it's got some cool people in the movie.
Jared Leto, you almost missed.
Yeah, he's playing the fucking Hatbox Ghost. We're on Disney's week. Haunted Mansions is the most old boomer ride that you could possibly ride. Pass every time. It's just
not going.
It's like a scary ride.
I don't know. 2 days from now, we're not going to be there. By the way, I'm gonna vetoing it.
That's your veto. Okay, we're gonna go on Peter Pan instead. Haunted Mansion. By the way, you can follow LCB on Twitter and Instagram at Lights Camera Bar. So on Instagram, Twitter at Lights Camera Pod. We'll go live from Disney. We'll do some shit. Mm-hmm. Whatever. We'll document it. And there's going to be a vlog and everything coming out from that. But this trailer, I was kind of surprised, but there's one thing I got to note about it, but I want to get your guys' thoughts first. Somebody Kendrick? Go.
Well, oh, sorry. No. I thought you were queuing something up. I was confused by that too.
Is he gonna
make his point?
Yeah, I was waiting. I want to show you. I thought there was a. I don't know. I thought that was a wing fail. Yeah, I don't know. The trailers seem fine. Again, I'm not really into this sort of thing. I don't really know the director very well, Justin Simien. He did Dear White People, which I never watched, despite it being addressed towards me. And all four of us.
I like that movie. Actually, I do like that movie.
I don't remember anything about it. But yeah, so I don't know much about it. So I just don't really feel like this is something that's going to hold much of my attention. But it also seems like a very Disney Plus movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't seem like one where it's going to be. That's not one you dump on. Wait, this is going straight to Disney Plus, right?
No, it's coming to theaters.
Oh, it's been a release? Oh, this isn't a theaters movie.
But you can, I think you can tell from the trailer it's not a Disney Plus movie, though, I feel like. I feel like you can tell there's like they actually like put some effort into it, right?
Yeah, $160 million worth of effort. That's an insane budget for a haunted mansion.
I thought you said 60.
No, for $160 million for haunted mansion. No, dude. Nah, this is going to...
I could see this making like $1.50 at the box office, but
then it wouldn't make its budget back.
Yeah, exactly.
I bet it'll do better than you guys.
It'll do. It's a Disney movie.
Yeah,
but like it's not meant for kids or anything like that. Then it's not going to be like the Disney kids and family bump to it. And I mean, if you spend $160 million on a movie, you're expecting $500 minimum. No, I feel like that's your barometer for, like, obviously makes its money back and then some, that's great. But I feel like that's what the goalposts are. And no way this hits anywhere near that.
And it's,
Jesus.
I'm just kind of surprised by this because I don't think it looks great. I think it looks way better than it has any right to. And what's up with all the famous people in it? This is a fucking stacked.
That's why. The cast is what does it for me. Like, if it was a mediocre to bad cast, I'd be like, no thanks. But I really like Lakeith Stanfield.
Yeah, so what's he doing in this?
Yeah, he'll get me.
Oh, wait a second. Never mind. I did see Dear White People. What was I thinking of? Oh, I was thinking of the TV show. What's the TV show?
They spun that off.
That's what I was thinking of. That's what I was thinking of. Okay.
To the whitey who it may concern.
to the cracker that it may concern.
Hey, what's up, honker? What's up, honky?
Oh, you said honker. That's you got dozen brain bad.
I mean, got dozen brain. Shout out Casey Smith. I think this is fun because this is throwback to like the early 2000s, like family flick, like the daddy daycares of the world. Just looks like a nice little fun family movie. We don't have enough of those where the fucking parents can actually enjoy the movie and the kids can enjoy the movie both. I think this has a shot at it. I don't think it's going to make anywhere near what it needs to read.
I don't think it's gonna lose money. Disney,
I'm also thinking about
150 million is
stacked. It's a stacked slate this summer with blockbusters. That's the other big concern.
Disney only really loses money on movies when it's like, when it's like an existing thing. It's like the old stuff that they try to be now make like their own property. Like the Lone
John
Ranger.
John Carter,
right?
That's the biggest loss ever, isn't it?
I'm curious. Maybe you may be right on this. I don't know. Yeah,
John Carter.
Yeah, mulch diggums.
But I'll say, watch the old movie or watch the trailer if you haven't seen the movie. And man, the first one is brutal.
I've never seen the first one.
Yeah, me neither.
It's
brutal.
Let's see how bad. I'm curious what the actual number one worst one is.
I'm pretty sure it's John Carter.
Yeah, I think it's John Carter and Lone Ranger. I think Disney owns both of them.
Oh, no. Lone Ranger. I fucking forgot how bad that movie was. Yeah. That is one of the worst movies.
John Carter, the Lone Ranger, Mortal Engines. Yeah. Turning Red was that much of a loss? Holy shit.
Yeah, but do you count, like, I don't know if I count COVID era stuff as much.
Yeah, that's true. King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Shout out Guy Ritchie.
The lockout year, the stats don't count.
Like
strike shortened season.
Okay, yeah, you're correct. That doesn't count. But Jungle Cruise absolutely counts on this list. I'm making
I think Jungle Cruise would have made a lot of money.
Mulan up here, Moonfall.
The 2003 Haunted Mansion made $180 million off a $90 million budget with Eddie Murphy. But that was Eddie Murphy in 2003.
That was, yeah, well, that was peak, yeah. Right? Yeah.
What about Haunted Mansion requires peak this much money?
The Eddie Murphy peak from 1988 to 2006.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's why I stopped there. Because, like, was it his peak? But financially, I feel like it was.
It is... Yeah, it's gonna be very interesting here to see what this does. Also, I think Lone Ranger's a worse fail than John Carter.
Because I never saw John Carter like most of the world, but
Lone Ranger,
not good.
Most people I know said it wasn't good, but Lone Ranger is a disaster of a movie.
Well, here's the big difference. John Carter had developmental nightmares. It was a disaster for promotion. It also they finally made like a sick fucking trailer for John Carter because like the first one didn't go well. There was issues with the making of the trailer, and the trailer was going to debut during the Super Bowl, but it was at the part of the game where if there was an injury, would go from the 30-second trailer to like the 15-second one, and there was an injury. And then so they played it was just the title with like a bunch of clips. And so they blame that. They're like, we were fucked after that. Like after that, like we were doomed. So Carter has that. Lone Ranger was like Johnny Depp off the peak of Pirates. Like there was so many things, and that thing
followed. So bad.
Yeah, I think that one. Like if you were to compare, like which one didn't be like this one was stinkier. Like Lone Ranger, we're like, and not that it's an excuse for John Carter, but there was enough fucked up shit where you're like, all right, we can. Like, yeah, it stunk, but, like, we can at least pass it off like there are issues.
I would say the percentage chance of Lone Ranger not being a hit coming into – like, if you found out who the cast and director was pretty low. Like, they fucked that up, like, more so than the marketing did.
The Lone Ranger is such – it's just the most, like, old boomery thing. It's just so – not even. It's
Hans
like older
Zimmer did
boomer.
The track on Lone Ranger? I didn't know that.
That movie – Gore Verbinski fucking directed it, man.
Yeah, that I remember, but I didn't remember fucking – Wait, Lone Ranger?
Zimmer
no, he
also
didn't
does like
Wait,
a bunch yeah. of. There's a bunch of scores that are done by Hans Zimmer where I'm like, is he doing it or is like his company doing it?
Yeah, exactly.
He has that company that like the Mr. Beast YouTube video. Like, I don't think Hans Zimmer scored that.
It's one of his dudes.
Mr. Beast is a big time guy, but I don't think he's getting Hans Zimmer to score his YouTube videos.
This cast list, they fall off a cliff after Johnny Depp. It's like Johnny Depp, awesome. And then like Army Hammer, which then like that's not moving a needle. And then like William Fichtner, great character actor, should not be the third billed person on your movie.
It will be crazy if this is the movie that makes Lakeith Stanfield like famous, like not just like people know him.
Weirdo
like,
famous,
we know
yeah.
him. But like the average person has no idea who Lakeith Stanfield is.
I like the idea of somebody discovering Lakeith Stanfield being like, Lakeith.
Haunted Mansion.
He really hasn't. You're right. He hasn't.
Lakeith James.
Lakeith Stanfield. That's such a cool name, honestly. But Lakeith.
I love. Yeah, cool. he. I loved him. He was great in Knives Out too. Uncut Gems. Great Uncut Gems. You almost forget Tim.
Oh yeah,
he's such a scumbag that cool in that movie. Yeah, him and Sandler character fighting in the club. 1-0
Wow. The Weeknd fucked Adam Sandler's girl in that. People choose to forget.
That is
that
like
piece of shit.
I that's one of my favorite scenes of any movie, Rick, in recent years. Just the way it looks. Like Lakeith has the really bright neon orange, and it's like all in their black light. That is the most stress inducing scene, I think, because the Weeknd is performing so fucking loud, so you can barely hear the characters. So that's the Haunted Mansion. I think in the end, whether we're gonna, I'm not gonna sit here and pretend I'm like fired up for it. I think what you said, Chris. I expected to watch that teaser and rule it out immediately. So credit to that, I guess. That's a start. Jake Gyllenhaal filming the Roadhouse remake. This actually kind of bummed me out a little bit. How much like this is just out there now? They used the UFC event this past weekend, which was funny enough, the most tweeted about UFC event I think ever. It even like was over Khabib and Conor McGregor, John Jones, a crazy weekend. But Jake Gyllenhaal, in the midst of all of it, because of the crowds there, they used it to the advantage, so it's going to look great. He went up, did a weigh-in and everything. Conor McGregor's involved. Jake Gyllenhaal looks fucking yoked. He looks so good that when that video came out of him at the weigh-in, I actually thought for a second that was like an undercard Right. I thought it was like someone who looked like Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. I was like, damn, that guy looks a lot like Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, oh, that is literally just him, even though he's like, what, 40-something years old, just shredded out of his mind.
But like they filmed it in front of the public, so I hope it's not like spoiling anything. Like that's my only – that was like kind of the one thing I was a little concerned about, but he looks good.
I was split on that where I'm like, I don't want to know how this fight goes by watching these clips. But at the same time, like that to me, like when you hopefully, you know, we're just making predictions here. But like hopefully that feel of like looking at a real UFC arena with like real people in the background, not like just some CGI set with all that shit plastered onto the back. Like I'm sure that feel is going to look so much better than like any other fight feel you'll ever get. And if that spoils a little bit, fine. If that's just like their scene of like some in between the first fight of the movie or something, maybe that would be cool too. But either way, I'm down. I don't know what the fuck this is going to have to do with Roadhouse. Like
the plot.
This
out
movie
there.
Seems like it has nothing to do with the Roadhouse right? original. Really? Yeah,
they put the plot out. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it has nothing to like do with the original Roadhouse. Gets, by the looks of it.
I know, because there's no UFC. But I think the plot is just that like he becomes a bouncer after he gets kicked out of the UFC. It just gives Dalton more
ex-UFC fighter ends up working at a roadhouse in the Florida Keys where things are not as they seem. that's
pretty vague.
It's so vague. Things are not as they seem.
Yeah, I'm excited for that, though.
I am too. Well, Gyllenhaal doesn't get enough credit to me as an actor. Like just the way he's done this before in terms of the way he transforms himself. I mean, fucking Southpaw, he was jacked. Nightcrawler, he weighed like 80 pounds, which I'm not done with the Oscar snubs draft yet, Jeff. But if I was drafting, that would have been in my top five.
We do mention it at the
end. He's so good in that.
We talked about three different Jake G roles.
Yeah, I know he should have been nominated for a lot. He's been snubbed quite a few times, bizarrely. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for this. I think Gyllenhaal more often than not is pretty good with selecting projects, and he's one of my favorites.
So. Oh yeah,
check out the Dog Walk Barstool Chicago's Dog Walk draft. Myself, Ken Jack, Kirk Minahan. We joined for an Oscar snubs draft, not snubs nominations, like anyone who didn't win. But it's funny, we talk about a couple of nominations that didn't happen or wins didn't happen, and we would say if this was an X year, they would have won. But the funny thing is, the Gyllenhaal thing was in the right time period for him to be nominated, and just like didn't.
2014 was a pretty good best actor category, from what I remember.
There was a couple of years in a row where it was pretty loaded.
They just don't respect him. I earnestly think he's too hot to be respected as a good actor. We're like, they want to nominate the Freakazoids. They don't want to nominate like the guy who looks like he would be, you know, big blockbuster action guy. You know what I mean? But like that's just, Jake Gyllenhaal's like an elite level actor. Every movie he's in, he crushes.
Fucking great. Yeah.
He'll always be Bubble Boy in my books.
Fucking,
that's why. You know, what if that's the reason why?
Okja, you know how good he was in that fucking movie? He was amazing in that.
By the way, if you're watching Poker Face, the third episode completely hinges on whether or not the viewer has seen the movie Okja, which is just so fucking funny to me. Ryan Johnson just picking Bong Joon-ho's probably third, fourth most popular movie.
Even better, they did a Burn Notice reference. What do you call it? Benjamin Bratt just being like, yeah, this guy's a real Michael Weston. And Adrian Brody's like, what are you talking about? He's like, you know, from Burn Notice.
I
have no idea.
I highly suggest that show, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys see the most recent episode was like more or less confirmed about Kathleen Kennedy? The one with the actors, or not the actors.
I didn't watch the most recent one.
The studio. Oh, you got to watch it. Like the villain is supposed to be Kathleen Kennedy.
So that is, I said Grindhouse, by the way. It's not what it is.
Roadhouse.
I said Grindhouse, which is, it's not Grindhouse. It's not a remake of that classic. Sydney Sweeney going to be Spider-Woman, apparently. Dakota Johnson's Madam Web. Sydney Sweeney's Spider-Woman.
Gucci. You're shooting roast joke Gucci out, Gooch. I can feel you. You're sitting on it.
Ooh-wee. This plot sounds amazing. Let me tell you.
I just don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to expect this movie. I just truly don't know.
Yeah, my guess is this is Sony doing a Spider-Man spinoff. My guess is that this is going to suck shit. Like, I mean, between fucking Morbius and the Venom movies, which are the worst things ever made by humans. I think Sydney Sweeney's – this is not some hot take. It's probably about to be one of the biggest movie stars in the world. I'm getting bad vibes.
I don't trust them. I just don't like.
Yeah,
why should we trust them?
You know, who I trust is Dakota Johnson. That's the only thing that makes me think this will be good. Is that she wouldn't sign on if this was anything remotely close to like shitty bad superhero movie. I think they're gonna do something a little bit different. I would assume. Again, like maybe she's just in the dire straits money wise, but like I feel like she's not.
Does she have that great a track record?
She picks like now. She picks way better since Fifty Shades. Yeah, that was her first franchise. So
since Fifty Shades, she's been in a lot of really good movies. I liked Our Friend quite a bit. Peanut Butter Falcon, Cha Cha Real Smooth. But she also
picks good stuff too. Like for what it's worth,
that's not
like her upcoming projects. Like the stuff she's picked and stuff she's casting coming up. She's working with some cool directors.
Well, they may suck. The movies may suck. The stuff that she has done, like the was the Voyeur movie that where she's watching people have sex with that dude. That movie stunk. There was another one too that she did, which I wasn't thrilled on.
She was in Big Time Adolescence, right?
She's never bad in whatever she does, though. Which is the
she's great in Euphoria. She's fucking incredible in Euphoria.
Yeah. Fucking Cassie.
Yeah, I'm hoping to go comic accurate on these suits. I'm looking at them now.
Madam Web. What a name for a superhero. Madam, strung out the brain cells on that one, Stan.
My trust isn't there with Sony, but I would like to be proven wrong.
Yeah. Well, they have this, and then they also have, which I think is way more interesting, is the Kraven the Hunter movie with Aaron Taylor Johnson.
It is more interesting, yeah.
Like sooner or later, one of these project. Does. I think one of these has to be good sooner or later. Sooner or later, right?
Did they see Venom too?
Let off with such a stinker.
I think The Amazing Spider-Man, the first one, is a good movie.
I actually defend both of them to a certain extent, but they weren't as – they should have been better.
They're not as – the problem is that they're nowhere near as good as either of the other Spider-Man trilogies. The first two – the Raimi trilogy or the follow-up.
Retelling the origin was stupid too.
Yeah. I mean, I love seeing Uncle Ben die. I'll be at this point. I like seeing it way more than I like seeing the Waynes clutch the fucking pearls or whatever and die.
He went out like such a bitch in The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, but he kind of always goes out like a doofus. Like he's always like,
I want him to die in a funnier way. I want him who's the Joe Chill of their universe? It's fucking Sandman or whatever. Like I want to like drop a piano on him or something like that. Like kill him in the most hilarious way.
If they do in the Flash movie, if they do like the full Flashpoint storyline in that alleyway scene, they'll show it again. But this time the kid will get shot. That's how it goes down in Flashpoint, which will be fucking hilarious if they decide to shoot 11-year-old Bruce Wayne.
No, just can't they show that.
Pop.
What'll be a funnier way for him to like Uncle Ben drives full speed and he drives full speed into like a tunnel painted onto a mountain and just crashes.
he's on the ground, and he looks like an accordion.
Yep. His teeth are coming out like pianos. I want Uncle Ben to die in the most hysterical way that they could possibly make it. That's a show I would watch. If they started making that again and watch in a heartbeat, is 1,000 Ways to Die or whatever that show was from Spike TV.
It's a great show.
Yeah, Spike TV had it wasn't a great channel, but like they had a lot of really good shows.
MXC is one of the funniest things
MXC.
Ever.
MXC. That's on Prime Video now, I think. It's so funny still.
Who's bringing home Luckiest Bastard of the Year?
Yeah, we need to bring it back eventually, the Guy's Choice Awards. And again, people think like it's some sort of goofy Travis Pastrana would be the hottest guest there. No, like Christopher Nolan was there. Christian Bale accepted or Brad Pitt, A-level people.
I remember in 2008, Brendan Fraser presented Harrison Ford with the Brass Balls Award. Do you guys remember?
Perfect. That is perfectly Spike TV.
And Harrison Ford was as high as he's been in any. I can see if I can find it, man. We should post it just without no contact.
Harrison Ford, by the way, he might pick up a nom for his performance in Shrinking. He's really fucking good in Shrinking, the Apple TV show. Like, it's some of the best acting of his career.
I'm just going through the guys' choice award.
He mailed everything in recently. So maybe maybe he needed to, like, have – maybe the effort in that would have, like, impacted him in Indy. So he's like, I got to do a good job here.
You got Ben Stiller presenting award to Clint Eastwood. Mel Gibson with the sword on stage. What band is this?
Asher Roth performing in 2009 at the Guy's Choice Awards. Let's go.
What this thing? I love college. I love college.
Duh.
Hey, I love drinking. Hey, I love smoking. Hey,
I Jarrell love Owens women. Making out with Halle Berry. What the fuck? Oh, yeah, of course. You know, Sacha Baron Cohen had a big Jason Statham. Dude, unreal. Wait, no, that's Jamie Foxx making out with Halle Berry. Oh,
I just sent you guys a group chat and image.
I couldn't see his face. All I saw was the big ass glasses that Tio always wears. A lot of Halle Berry. They really liked Halle Berry at the Guy's Choice Awards.
Emma Stone won, I think, the Hot and Funny Award one year.
Love that. She's one of the guys.
The award. The trophy itself was a pair of deer antlers.
Yes.
The thing. The stag. It's like a stag award or something, I think they called it.
Hot and funny.
It makes perfect sense. Oh, here's Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. A-listers were at this shit. It was him and Mickey Rourke, so they were doing something for Iron Man 2, I guess. Oh my God. Christopher Mintz Plasse. Mila Kunis won something. Oh, this is great. I got to do a whole dive.
I think Mila Kunis might have won the inaugural Hot and Funny. And then she passed the torch along to Emma Stone. Yeah.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate. With the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
So that's news. Let's talk about Mando. Mando episode 1 of season 3, the 17th chapter in the Mandalorian saga, kind of, because they also had Book of Boba Fett, which they didn't really recap, which was kind of a shock. The more people watch Book of Boba Fett, I think, than people realized, right? Isn't that like a thing?
That was crazy.
That was crazy. I think it's insane they didn't do that. Like, all they have to do is add a little thing to the – maybe they're trying to get people to go back and watch Boba Fett. I don't know. It's kind of crazy that they didn't do that. It's also a thing, though, too, where I can also see people watching being like, well, whatever. Who cares? He's back. Like,
yeah, I think most people will probably be like that.
Yeah. The funny thing is, though, the Book of Boba Fett Mando episodes were actually good episodes. They were good episodes.
They weren't even episodes of Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, they were just
Mando episodes.
So it's kind of strange. This one directed by Rick Famuyiwa, who did the Bill Burr episodes. He's also directing the last two episodes of the season. By the way, the directors for the season are crazy. They have Rachel Morrison did the second episode, which Ken Jack went ahead and watched. I have not watched it yet. We do have the screeners for it.
10 times better than the first. It's awesome. You guys are going to lose your shit at parts of it.
Rachel Morrison, she big cinematographer, did Mudbound, a couple of Black Panther, worked with Ryan Coogler a lot.
Roman Polanski's doing the fifth episode. I don't know if you saw that.
Who?
Roman Polanski is doing the fifth one.
Yes.
People are pumped.
Crazy.
Making his comeback.
And Woody Allen wrote it too. It's just like,
Kevin Spacey guest spot.
Yeah. Lee Isaac Chung doing the third one.
I'm Fungo Molestos. The spaceman. Let me tell you something, Din Djarin.
Lee Isaac Chung
is wet as Scooter Brown.
Have you ever put a Twi'lek head in your mouth?
Oh my God.
No, he wouldn't like Twi'leks.
You need to cut that one out of the episode. We cannot have that joke in there. Put that out. Mark that down. Do not put that joke in this episode. It's not good. Lee Isaac Chung directed Minari. He's directing one. Carl Weathers is directing one. Peter Ramsey's directing one. Peter Ramsey directed Into the Spider-Verse. Bryce Dallas Howard, and then Rick Famuyiwa doing the last two. I know. I love this episode. It's just like, man, it's fucking Mando. Like, I love the spoilers. Love the space battle. I don't know. Like, there's like, I love the fucking pirate villain ruled so hard. Like, that is such a Clone Wars Rebels villain. The shootout in the town square. It was such like a breath of fresh air for and Andor was great, but Andor's awesome. But Andor's like a drama, and I love Andor. And I was like, all right, let's now have a little bit of the fun too. These two are great. Don't get rid of get cast aside the other shit. I love this episode. I just we're back. We're back with Mando.
Exactly. It was just kind of exciting seeing a lot of other stuff. And I feel like with the pirate stuff, they almost queued up Hondo Yudanto, which is one of like my favorite villains from Clone Wars. It wasn't him. It's the dude with the moss hanging off his face, which is played by the same dude who did like Zoro's are on duck sauce or whatever from Game of Thrones. The dude who screws over Khaleesi in Karth in Game of Thrones. But yeah, I mean, the other all the action looked great. I think specifically one of the cooler parts was like the CGI on that monster, that crocodile monster was fucking sick. It was really, really good. That monster was great. Just seeing kind of parts of the gang, so to speak, getting back together and their great writing off of Cara Dune. Just like, oh, so you just join special forces. She's out of here. I like that.
Simple,
easy. It's an easy one. But yeah, I think the ending was great. And again, I just, I can't pump up enough how good the next episode is. It's longer too. It's like 45 minutes. It's a really good S episode. Really good.
And this one, I
ended this episode of Mandalorian pissed because I was like, that's it? Because I think last it was just spoiled my brain so much to just expect an hour and a half of whatever. And I was like, 30 minutes? Is this some sort of sick fucking joke?
But yeah, I kind of love that it's 30 minutes. I kind of love
that. Thank you, like, Gooch. Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you.
It works for the Mandalorian because it's like serialized adventure, like, yeah, kind of like Saturday morning, like watch with your dad kind of TV. Like, it's nice. I think Andor is a much more like well-written series,
produced
series, but nothing feels more Star Wars to me than this. Like Mandalorian, it just, the vibes are just perfect. They're very throwback to the OT. They just nail it. They nail it. They nail the feel, which is the most important thing. Cause like, even if it's like a kind of a slower pace, maybe not a ton of stuff happened this episode, but you're still very entertained and you leave in a better mood than when you came in.
I didn't like Mando doing a one-liner, by the way. I didn't like that using your head thing. Like, Mando's not funny. He's not a funny dude. We don't need him cracking one-liners. Oh, that's using your head. That's a Star Wars thing. That's not a Mando. That's Mando doesn't deliver that line. Let fucking,
he's got dad jokes. He's embracing the dad role.
He's a cultist that's going to redeem himself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka. He doesn't need to drop dad jokes. Like, that's just not part of his MO.
I love that you said that because I kept thinking that too. Every time he gets brought up, I'm like, cleanse your spirit in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
Yeah, he's still a nutcase.
Like, he's a literal psychopath, and like, he's the most unfunny character in Star Wars. And I don't think you need him dropping dad jokes.
No, this is not.
I do have a question, by the way. Before, have you guys all watched Clone Wars or I should say Rebels?
No,
I have. No. Jeff.
Okay, because I do have a couple questions, but go ahead, Chris.
I don't think this is one of the better episodes of the series, but that's because it wasn't trying to be. This was. I think that I'm going to give it a lot of leeway. I did like the episode, but we do forget, like, it's been over 2 years since we've seen these characters officially. I mean, I know they did the detour in Book of Boba Fett, but I mean, did that series ever really exist? I mean, it came and went so quickly. So I like this quite a bit, and I'm with you completely, Gooch. I went to make dinner while this episode was going on. I was still watching it, and by the time I didn't even finish dinner by the time the episode was over. I think that's great. I'm fine with, hey, you want to make your season finale an hour long? Sure. I love The Last of Us. But I'm really done with The Last of Us being like, hey, it's one of the shorter episodes of the season. It's only 70 minutes. It's like, come on. You can tell these stories in a much more condensed form. It's a lot of setup, but it's setup that involves characters I really like, a story that I'm interested in. I think that one thing that Mandalorian has done a tremendous job of that for some fucking reason Star Wars cannot seem to get right. It's simple. Okay, guy's going to redeem himself. He's got to go take a big bath. That's it. That's all I need from Star Wars. I don't understand a long line. And Lucas started this with the nonsense of the prequel, where everything's got to be so goddamn complicated. It's just it's a little adventure serial. That's all it is. I don't need anything beyond.
But a prequel suck balls.
Right. Yeah. I don't need any. Or the fuck, by the time you get to Rise of Skywalker and they have the fucking Wayfinder, and if they found like, Curly's gold, then it would have led them to the fucking Emperor or whatever. You know, it's just nonsense.
That, by the way.
Yeah.
As a Last Jedi defender, the fact that people don't piss and shit themselves. Moreover, them holding up that thing to like the outline of the Death Star. Like, it's just such a convoluted, goofy, stupid thing. I'm like, so what stupid. The fuck, man?
Well, it's literally, it's like something you would like out of Goonies or some shit, like that they would do ironically. Yes. But no, I think that they've done an excellent job of keeping this simple. You know the characters. Yeah, I mean, I do think it is quite a cop out that's like just in between seasons two and three. They're like, oh yeah, they're back together. But you know what? Those two together are great. And so I'm willing to accept it. I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost a way you can, yeah, like I would agree. It's like one by one knock on it. It's like it kind of takes away that big moment, even though I did like the way he goes and gets him in Book of Boba Fett. You just have to have seen that. Like it is, it's one of those things too, where you almost have to remember too, it's just as much of a character moment for Mando to take his helmet off in front of everyone and like see, like, and say goodbye to Grogu too. Like, oh, all right, it's not totally lost because they're back together. Like it does change him in that sense. So I guess that's like, if you're going to, again, I'm playing devil's advocate because I am saying that is a critique I have of it, but I guess that's one way to kind of like view it back from the other side.
I think just to add on to that, the only other part of it that makes it kind of makes it make sense for me is like if they're trying to present this whole big shared new series universe where like, hey, look, you can watch Mando, Boba Fett, Ahsoka, like they're all going to be connected in certain ways. And almost like if you view them as if they're one big entity versus separate shows, then yeah, I guess it kind of makes sense because if they're all just going to be interweaving with each other anyway, just view it more in that sense. But yeah, it just, I think that's a tough thing to ask audiences to just compensate for, or just like accept, if that makes sense.
I would agree. I think it's kind of a crazy ask of like what they're doing for people who maybe haven't seen it, but it is what it is. Like, I mean, whatever, we're not producing it.
All right. I got a question. The space whales, like explain that to me. I remember what do they do? They time travel.
They travel through,
hyperspace.
Slipspace. Oh, Halo. Never mind.
They are, so they're a pretty massive part of Rebels. And it seems like they're going to be a big, I don't know if it's just like a thing that we saw. Like maybe they'll come back into this season, or maybe it's just like a little Easter eggy thing. But they're Purgils, I believe is how you say it properly. But they're a big episode and a big arc in Rebels. But they travel at hyperspeed, pretty powerful beasts. Yeah, that's why you saw the silhouettes of them. And
they had that whole episode where they like had the mine or whatever, right? Like they blew up the mine that the Emperor or Empire was running that was feeding them or something, hurting them. I forget exactly.
Rebels has a couple downward things that I don't love, but some of like the lore stuff and the way they pull from past Star Wars stuff that never happened, it is very cool. And it brings in legend stuff that people wanted for years, Thrawn included. So yeah, Rebels, I would suggest, if you love Mando, I just highly suggest watching Clone Wars and then especially Rebels, because it does, and Rebels is going to tie in even more is what it seems like. Also, they said that Grogu is going to talk.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Sooner rather than later. Filoni said he's going to talk sooner rather than later.
Papa.
He kind of didn't Papa. He kind of talk? That's kind of what they said in this episode, right?
With the Babu critters, basically.
Yeah, like he was like kind of talking with the little Fricks.
Yeah,
frickin' yes, baby.
Babu Frick's Italian, right?
Babu it's Frick is canonically Italian. Yeah.
Babu Frick.
that was pretty funny.
Was that Babu?
I just one of their creatures.
Because one of them had the same mustache, the Fu Manchu stash.
All these Fricks, a lot of these Fricks look alike, though, man.
You got two white guys with beards on this podcast, though. So it's not like it's not that crazy. Like,
Chris being racist against the Babu Frick aliens. It's actually good. I like that. You got to keep that one going. Just be like, get these fucking people off my planet.
What? what's a word that isn't offensive but would sound offensive to the Fricks?
I don't know.
We'll leave that up. We'll leave that up to the
if
fans.
If my daughter marries a Babu Frick, I'm disowning her ass. tell you what, a family of Babu Fricks moved in next door. I'm locking the doors tonight.
I said, mother Fricker.
Yeah, Fricker would be good.
Fricker,
I
kind of
like that. A Fricker. A mother Fricker.
Jeff doesn't want to be on camera while we make racist.
Did Jeff's power go out again?
Good question. Well, I mean, his Wi-Fi is still going, so.
Yeah.
We forgot to touch on this, by the way. I think we skipped past it, but since Jeff's out of the room, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle trailer. Did you guys see
that? I'm not a TMNT guy.
I have no interest in it. Yeah.
Why would you assume I'm a TMNT guy? Though?
I just assumed anybody born after 1990. I just assume if you.
That show like ended before we were born.
We get a new iteration like every 4 years.
Yeah, and usually they're bad. Like fucking Michael Bay or like the Secrets of the Ooze. Like they're not good.
I like the one with Megan Fox. I like that one.
How do you not like these properties, which have all been bad since you've been born?
Like, okay, we talked about this. I can't remember what movie.
The cartoon series is good too.
Okay, so there is like there is unironically good Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stuff out there. Or is it all just like,
yeah, the original TV series is great. I think the original movie is awesome. I think the original movie is really well done. I think it becomes goofier and a little more stupid in Part the second one. And I think the third one is just it's atrocious.
Have you ever seen that the Christmas special they did?
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Yeah, have you seen them dance on Oprah? Damn my favorite thing of all time. It's the most like 90s thing ever is the girls dancing on Oprah.
I'm not a Turtles guy. I'm Franklin Strictly. No Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Early enough for the Turtle Club.
The funniest story is Clemmer having his fucking TMNT tattoo.
Only three of them.
Despite them not having a fourth member. Just one of the most insane things I've ever heard. If you never watched the bracket, that was all-time reveal from Chris Clemmer.
They got a guy. They got a guy they're considering, but he has no idea about these tattoos.
Yeah, no idea, no clue. He's going to learn about this eventually. I want it to be a sit down. I want to figure this out.
There's so many trios they could have picked from. They pick one with four. There's only three of them.
He's like, we all like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Is there nothing else you liked other than TMNT that had?
We'd play with our turtles.
Clemmer, love you, brother. Clemmer.
Yeah.
The best.
Last of Us, speaking of Pedro Pascal, crazy episode of The Last of Us, penultimate episode of The Last of Us, which my numbers in The Last of Us are all messed up because I keep forgetting. I love watching like the Easter egg videos before I do this just to kind of see. But crazy episode, we meet David, who is a character that I wasn't aware of. And David is an awesome villain. Spoilers for The Last of Us, crazy, crazy episode. The Ellie episode, I would say probably my second favorite, if not favorite episode, just banana shit that happens. Yeah. The chase stuff, everything in the woods. I love the setting. I did watch the side-by-sides with the actual show and in the game. It seemed to be very copied from the game, which is a good thing because it was perfect on live action. This was an awesome episode. Crazy ending. So emotional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of my favorite episodes of the season too. And I think that this is the episode for me where it's really Bella Ramsey becoming Ellie more than anything else. Like that's where she truly like really like inherited the character, because that moment is obviously huge in the games as well. But, like, I think that she nailed that. And like that scene where she's just chopping that dude's fucking face into hamburger meat. I mean, that is some serious, like great rage acting, like awesome level. And like, I think that's an element of Ellie from the games that hadn't been really like totally grasped yet. And I think she just really hit on the head there. And then the ending of that episode with her reuniting with Joel was awesome as well. And I think they did a really good job, David. That actor who I only vaguely remember from, I think like The Young Pope, where he was like sucking off Jude Law or something like that. He was like Jude Law's childhood fuck friend, I think. But that's, he's a good actor. He's a really good, I think he did a really good job as David. Cause like you need a certain level of like, like a cadence to your speech when you're doing like a religious or cult leader or something like that. I think he nailed it, where it's like this kind of creepy charisma that's hard to explain, but like he had that. And man, I really like that one. Great, great episode and great adaptation from game to screen.
Yeah, I dug it as well. Maybe not as much as you guys. I guess I am partial to to thinking those first five episodes were probably a little bit better. But I think it's setting us up for one hell of a finale. And it's a massive step up from the previous two episodes as well. It really, if there's one, I actually kind of defended episode 7, but especially after watching this one, it's like, God, that really, there was really no reason for it to exist. I mean, or at the very least, it could have been condensed here. Great tension. And it's why I'm happy I haven't played the game. It seems like every week more and more fucked up shit is happening on this show. And I like that. I like that about the post-apocalyptic shit. Cause if like something went down in real life, yeah, there would be people eating people and stuff like just horrific acts going on. So, what's up, Gooch?
I just can't believe how quickly they resorted to eating people. Like, they must really fucking suck at hunting, because Ellie shows up, she goes out in the woods for an hour, finds a deer, and they're acting like there's nothing to be had.
That was my thing. Are they out of food, or they just eat too much? Like, I think they eat too much.
I think they eat too much. Well, it's been 20 years since the initial, the breakout.
Maybe ration a little bit. Like, right? I think if that's on them. Like maybe
too many people.
Two meals a day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He had a big plate.
He got the big boy. He's the leader. The leader gets the big boy plate.
He got the big papa plate.
Is that like the
good meat?
That's a reason to promote your apocalyptic town. It's like, in our town, you can get seconds for your dinner. It's like, we get more than just the initial helping. I have no idea how it's going to end. Now, I see some people saying, video game boys, that they think it's going to end on a cliffhanger. Is there enough time to get everything in here in one episode?
I'm assuming it's going to be a longer one. I don't know the runtime of it yet, but I think they can get...
It's the shortest one of the season.
Really? So then it has to be. Yep. There's no way they can get everything. But when they did they showed obviously part of the next episode, at the end of this one, it looked like they were at the spot they needed to be for the end, minus the epilogue of the first game. So I don't know. That's confusing. But the ending is devastating. So I'm assuming that they're going to have to show part of it, unless they're maybe trying to twist stuff up for how they're going to adapt the second game. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not. I've kind of had fun not making predictions on this show and not really diving too much into like the heavy spoiler type videos. I'm just along for the ride. I mean, this is great this week. This is like self-contained. Like, almost if you add like 20 minutes to it, it works as like a self-contained little action movie. It was really really good. Pedro Pascal, by the way. Ultimate healing factor. That guy was on death's door. Yeah. And then all of a sudden that was such a great scene, by the way, the interrogation scene. We even brought that up. Holy fuck.
Oh, that was fucking awesome, dude. That was some metal shit that he was doing. It was like Liam Neeson taken.
I believed him.
That's a great scene in the game, too.
You've seen that side of him, too, because you have seen that side of him, but you haven't seen it in the full, like, really, oh, dang.
Yeah.
Like, he is ruthless, right?
Mm-hmm. Awesome, awesome scene from the game. There's also, I'm curious, Gooch, too. Like, there's something that needs to happen in the next episode to set up the entire second season. And I'm curious, because they need to get to that point. Like, that, the certain action needs to happen. And I'm just curious, because it's like the entirety of the plot of the second game hinges on it. And I'm just, I don't know. I'm very curious how they.
I think they end on a cliffhanger. Especially, they announced season two. So early after they asked, after the pilot. So I'm guessing they already knew that this is going to be like two seasons. Like, they've already got everything mapped out on how they want to do it. So it wouldn't surprise me if they end on a cliffhanger.
I have a quick question. They announced
that Halo season two pretty early too. And that fucking show sucked ass.
I have, are they making a second season for that? Did people watch that?
People watched it and they hated it, except for George Kittle, who weirdly loves it. He's a huge Halo guy. He loves it. We
DM'd about CTE. He's got CTE.
Jesus.
Are they making a Last of Us 3 game?
I think so.
I think so.
Because I'm worried. Are we going to get that Game of Thrones shit where it's like, oh, we're out of material now. So instead of just waiting for the next game to come out, we're just going to go ahead and barrel on and make shit.
Not in development as of 2021. So, I mean, maybe by now.
Yeah, it might be.
That should be a money factory for Naughty Dog. I would assume that they're continuing to make it.
Did the second one end in a way that had like a certain amount of finality to it, or was it like, no, we can definitely
get more? No, it wasn't. It wasn't like the story was over. It was like this chapter of it was
so they
done.
Can definitely do it.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Very curious how this second season goes. I could not be more interested in how they take it or where they take it. Although a lot of stuff that was maybe wrong with that second second game had to do with the fact that you had to play like the who you play as with, I don't know, like the user interaction of it, which would be different, obviously, when you're doing it from a show perspective. I don't know. We'll see.
I do have one big hope for the next episode. That's we need to get a lot of clickers, a whole lot of infected.
They've been holding back.
They really did hold back this season. I wish there was a little bit more. Just there a little some bit more in the here preview. And there. Just throw them in there.
There was some in the preview. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't. They didn't show a ton, but.
I turned off Last of Us, and I turned on Daisy Jones and the Six.
that's a hell of a late night watch.
Pretty good. They had Timothy Oliphant. You got to see the wig he was wearing.
I saw the photo you posted on Twitter. The show's hilarious.
It was like, are they trying to be funny here? Like, it's not a funny show at all. But like the wig he's wearing is so absurd.
Daisy Jones. That's a wild.
Oh
one.
My god.
Oh, he has a weird wig in that too.
All right. Interview Matt Shackman talking to consultant Christoph Waltz, Marvel stuff, WandaVision. Yeah, we talked a few weeks ago. Here's the interview.
All right, we are joined very happily by Matt Shackman. How's it going? Lot to talk with you about. You have is this the most you've had on your plate in your career in your life right now?
It's pretty busy right now. Yeah, I've got a great show that's coming out next week, and I'm in post-production on a show for Apple, which is really exciting, and I'm prepping a movie. So all at the same time, it's sort of the beginning, middle, and end of three different projects.
Well, the show and the movie aren't very big deals, so I do know that I'm sure they're small potatoes, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll talk about them later. Maybe we will.
Small indie things.
But let's talk about The Consultant, which hits Amazon Prime Video February 21st, starting then. Pretty big name in it, a bunch of big names, but one of our favorite people, Christoph Waltz, in the show. A mysterious consultant comes to the rescue of Compware after a prominent merger falls through and seemingly starts running the company. It's a very dark comedy vibes. We likened it, and you can correct us if we're wrong on this. It's got like almost a Silicon Valley combined with Succession vibes to it in terms of is that accurate?
Is that
what
good?
Can we expect with this show, especially with someone who is so beloved? In a mysterious type role as Christoph Waltz.
I think that's fair. You know, maybe a little bit of Severance in there too.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Damn. Fuck. I wrote that analogy and I was like, I'm missing something. I don't know what it is. Severance was right there. Damn.
And maybe just a little bit of The Devil's Advocate, if you remember that Keanu Reeves Al Pacino movie from way back. Like, there's just the hint of that supernatural in there. I mean, but honestly, the reason why I wanted to do it and why I love it so much is that it's its own thing, you know, it's its own thing. It really, it feels fresh and different. It's funny and moving and weird and off-putting and unnerving in all the best ways. So it felt like something I hadn't seen before. It's certainly something I hadn't made before. And so that's always exciting.
Yeah, it's dark comedies are tough and you've worked on some like, I mean, we'll mention some later on when we talk in this interview. You've worked on things that are closer to regular comedies, some things that are darker comedies, weird hybrids like a WandaVision, for example. But what is it about comedies that kind of lean on that more dramatic, darker, kind of cruel undertones that makes it more difficult or easier? Do you think it's either or?
I mean, comedy works when it's real, when it's grounded, right? I think the best comedy is the most truthful, and truth can be painful and funny at the same time. So, I mean, when I work on comedies, it's usually harder than working on dramas, right? When you work on a comedy, it's so specific and timing is everything. And you really just need to dial in the details. And when you're doing a drama, it's all about lightness because you don't want it to be too heavy. You want to find those moments of humor that kind of keep things alive. So when you're doing a drama, the secret is comedy. When you're doing a comedy, the secret is drama. And when you get to work on something like this or Succession, where, you know, it's all of those things are happening at the same time, those are the best kind of shows, the ones that make you laugh and cry often at the same time.
I like that explanation too, because we were just talking recently about The Leftovers, which is an incredible show. You do not get a lot of comedic breaks. It is very drama and very, very dour. That just leaves you depressed. But yeah, I like that. That's a good formula. I have a much more technical question for you, and it is, what about Germans makes them inherently scary as shit? It's an obvious answer, but I'm curious where you go with it.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear on Christoph's behalf, he is Austrian. So he's German adjacent.
Yes.
But, you know, he is amazing. He is one of the funniest people I know, but also one of the funniest actors. But the humor comes out of this amazing precision and also like awkwardness. And he found this way to bring this guy to life who's terrifying, but also just feels so out of place and so awkward and never quite knows the right thing to say. And it's a brilliant combination. I mean, obviously we saw him in those Tarantino movies and he's a master. And when I read the script, he was the person who came into my head, sort of like there aren't that many people who could play this kind of part. And really, he's the one. And so when we asked him if he wanted to do it, he said he did. I mean, it was just like winning the lottery. It's incredible. Yeah.
I just saw him in Horrible Bosses too. And I feel like this role almost like feels, it's kind of like the same sort of CEO thing. He's very funny in Horrible Bosses too.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, he would be a terrifying boss to have.
Well, what role of his would you consider your favorite?
I mean, Inglourious Basterds is obviously the one I think of immediately. Obviously, Django too. I mean, he won Oscars for both of them. But seeing him in Inglourious Basterds, like all of us, we hadn't seen him before really here. I mean, I know he'd been working forever, you know, in wonderful things in Europe and he was a legend there before, but he just burst onto the screen and he just owned that movie, which was hard to do. And you have an amazing Brad Pitt performance. You've got so much going on, but he just was so funny and so weird and so terrifying that I just was leaning in every time he was on screen.
Go ahead, Ken Jack.
The opening of Inglourious Basterds is your favorite of all time, right?
Right. That's what I was kind of going to say is if someone who is, it's funny you mentioned that because that is a scene I'm going to reference. If someone who is directing him and who is directing these people and write, is there something that maybe as a viewer, the presence of someone too is so important, not just the way they deliver? Because I think of that scene and even the moments where he isn't talking and he's looking and he's holding that big pipe. Like, what is it about him especially where it's just the way they stand and the way they look that separates them from maybe others?
I mean, great actors have that gift, right? You just want to watch them. Like, you know, and some actors I think you can watch for longer than others. Like Christoph, he wasn't saying anything. You'd watch him for like an hour and a half solid. You know, Denzel Washington, 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Just watch that amazing actor just be there. And there's just something about them. Obviously, it's the emotional life. It's what's happening inside. Like, they're just so alive and they're so present. And yeah, that scene is absolutely terrifying. And the stillness of it all leading up to Shoshana. She runs away. Mm-hmm. Incredible performance. But I mean, kudos to him for just being the genius that he is. And also to Tarantino to being like, this is the guy. Like, I don't need to go get some famous American actor to do an accent. I'm going to find this guy. And just brought that to life better than anybody.
With the consultant, I feel like we've talked about, or I think talked to just like a lot of people who have kind of danced between the horror and slash suspense and comedy genres. And I feel like we've said this a lot, just like horror directors do great in comedy directors do great in horror. Seems like there's a lot of like just weird yin yang going on there. Just curious why you think that is.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I think probably because horror and comedy have rhythms, right? And great comedic actors understand rhythm better than anyone. And they can apply that to horror as well. Like the way you tell a joke, the way you set up a funny moment is so similar to the way you set up a horrific reveal, right? The building, the tension, the pace, the, you know, how long you hold something, like all of these, this is like, you know, these are metronomes. These are human metronomes, these brilliant actors, and they just understand it. And obviously we try to, and how we stage it and how you work with the other actors and editing, all of that works. But if it doesn't work when you're watching it, this is one of the things I learned, you know, is like, if it's not happening in front of you, like, it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia for most of my adult life, like I am laughing my ass off watching it. And if I wasn't, it wouldn't be funny on screen. Like if it isn't funny in front of you or scary or unnerving or moving in front of you on the set, it's not going to be so in the editing room. You just got to be live there, you know?
That's true. That is very parallel. That like that build up to the jump scare and the build up to the punchline. They are very, yeah, that's very true. Never put that together.
The show reminder comes out February 24th, Amazon Prime Video. It takes place within a mobile gaming company. Are you, how aware are you of the, I don't know, what's the right word? Epidemic? What is it? That Instagram is filled with ads for mobile game companies. How aware are you?
They're
everywhere.
Yeah.
It's usually a cameo of a very famous sitcom actor pitching something like a Royal Match where you're like, oh my, you're like this. You're like, oh, it's Jason Alexander. And he's like, there's no ads. Can you integrate that and maybe a future episode here that somebody's doing a cameo for you guys?
I love that. It's so specific. And I think that's very WandaVision too. I love that idea.
Like, it is.
Fake ads and all that. No, I think that's wonderful. I mean, it's such an interesting culture, like that game. I mean, they're everywhere, those games. And they're made to sort of fill up our day, and you don't want to spend too much time thinking about them, right? And it's, and yet someone has to make them, and there are empires built on them, you know? And that's what Compware does.
It's like a good cameo, just like it's Kevin. Hey, I'm Kevin Sorbo here promoting Compware. Gotta try our pie goblins or whatever. Like, just like the best cameo actors out there just doing it. I could see it.
I think it's great. We're open for pitches. Any agents, they want to call us up, let us know.
Oh, shit.
Sorry, one second. Season one of any show, how much thought goes into maybe a potential season two for you as well, especially something that is on the dramatic side of things too, where you are building up an arc, you're building up a story, maybe more so than a straight up comedy. How much of it do you play into that? Like, you brought up Severance, for example. Severance season one without a season two is like, what the fuck, what happened? But for you, how is the process for that?
I mean, you always want to think about it. You want to know where you're going. Christoph, all the actors, they want to know where they're going. How is this adding up? What are we playing? Because, you know, when you're doing something that's mysterious and you're dribbling out clues here and there, you know, the people who are making the show want to know, you know, where are we going? Because that helps us be more thoughtful about it. So there's definitely a plan, but you want every episode wants to be super satisfying, beginning, middle, and end. And then you want every season to be satisfying as an arc, you know, like as if it were a movie, right? You want beginning, middle, and end of an entire season. But you also want to be thinking about, okay, what's going to happen in season two? And, you know, we don't want to be presumptuous and say, hey, we're back for season two. We don't know. Hopefully people dig the show and then we can come back. But it is building and getting ready to launch into something else. But that's the trick. Satisfying all of those things can be a little, can be hard. You know, I mean, some shows like drive people crazy because they don't give you enough information, right? They don't give you enough of a wrap up, you know? And we didn't want to be that show either. We definitely wanted enough explanation and reveals as you go. So you didn't just feel like you're getting teased the whole time, you know, that this was building.
Consultant, make sure you check it out February 24th. We'll come back to this in Christoph Waltz too on Amazon Prime Video. This is the nerd out section. I'm sure you get this every time you talk with somebody. We got Infinity Gauntlets on our desk. We're big Marvel fans. We're a nerd out with Succession next. Because it is unbelievable. And you had the honor, I guess, of doing one episode, not just one of the more notable episodes, the We Hear For You episode, the Argosies, the retreat they go on where they're trying to buy PJ and all that. What is it like doing that show compared to everything else? Because that show, I don't know how that is as interesting a show it is, about just based on what it is. It's like if you surface level explain what Succession is, you'd be like, that's the most boring, stupid shit in the world. Yet it is, I'm waiting.
The best show on TV, so good.
To return. Like the actors, the writing, how does that separate itself from your end? Get someone who's been a part of the show.
Yeah. I mean, what a joy that was. Jesse, who writes that show, he has a wonderful group of writers who work with him too, but you know, it sprung from his mind and he's the showrunner. He's remarkable. He's an incredible writer. And, he also comes from comedy. You know, he's one of those guys who, like, even though that show has a lot of incredible moving drama to it and high stakes, and it's incredibly funny. I mean, he's that person, that rare person who can just do all of those tones and kind of do them all at the same time. And it's messy and wonderful. And the dialogue is incredible. And then he put together this ensemble. You know, he and Adam McKay put together this ensemble of actors, you know, Jeremy Strong and Brian Cox and Sarah and everybody, Matthew McFadden. There's so many amazing actors on that show. Every one of them is amazing that it feels like doing a play. I do a lot of theater too. And you have these 6-7 page scenes. And just watching these amazing actors just tear into this dialogue, and then getting a chance to kind of just, it feels almost like a documentary in a way, you know, it's shot in a way that feels very loose. And so you're finding things as you go. So it's not, the consultant's very formal and it's very precise and it's almost like, you know, Parasite or something in the way it's put together. But Succession is meant to be loose, you know, and you kind of try to grab everybody's close-ups and the wides. Everything's happening at the same time and all the actors, they don't know when it's their shot, you know, so they're not saving any kind of performance for a close-up or something. So it's just rip-roaring fun. And oftentimes you're done with some epic scene and just like before lunch, what are we going to do after lunch, you know?
Yeah. We Ken, Jack, and I like to talk about when people, when Americans realize that somebody is not from the United States in a show. And I feel like Succession has two of those where I'm still not fully sure, like people who aren't big film and TV buffs know that Sarah Snook and Matthew McFadden are not from the United States. Like his role, he plays one of the most British characters I've ever seen in my life in Frost Nixon, for example, where he looks like a Beatles like backup singer. So when that gets discovered, it's always my favorite thing is how not American they are.
Darcy in Pride and Prejudice, right? Opposite Keira Knightley. I mean, he's a British period actor when he needs to be. He's amazing and like a loveliest human. All of them are amazing. So that show is a blast to work on. I'm sorry I haven't been able to get back there with these other stuff going on, but it's really fun to work on that show.
The more I think about it, Tom really is a very British character, except he's just within an American accent. That is such a British, like, good, funny show character. The more I'm thinking, the more I put it together.
I used to work on the show House for years and years and years. Yeah. And I don't know if the story is true or not, but a Bryan Singer who directed the pilot for that show was like, you know, I guess he was just, he wanted to find a great American actor to play House. That was his thing. He was like, I'm looking for a great American actor. It's gotta be a great American actor. These Brits. He was like, no, it's American. And Hugh Laurie put together an audition tape in like, Africa or somebody who's making a movie, and Singer watched it and was like, yes, that is a great American actor. Like, nobody wanted to tell him, I guess, for a few weeks. Like, so like a really famous British comedian. Hey, and
it's like,
it worked out great, you know. He fooled it.
With It's Always Sunny, which is like my personal favorite sitcom ever, because I think like a lot of people are like, oh, Seinfeld, stuff like that. Like, I grew up too late, I think, for Seinfeld. So like growing up, It's Always Sunny was that show for me. You obviously directed a ton of episodes, but I would just love to know if you had a favorite, like a favorite episode. It could be as a viewer or as a director, just one that you're like, that's the episode I love the most.
There are so many of them, and I had a great time. But I think there's one in particular, and I have a poster on it behind me on the wall here. Is The Night Man Cometh, which is sort of this cult classic that we eventually did as a live show. We did it on tour and traveled the country. So it just had a crazy life beyond the time. And also, I think it was the thing where I really realized what the impact of the show was, because we had such a low budget and we were making it in warehouses and the streets of downtown LA and occasionally in Philly for a week here or there. But it was very sort of small, and you don't get a chance to sort of see the impact of it because you're kind of making it and then you send it out there. And we heard that people seemed to like it, but we didn't know. And then we did this live performance of The Night Man at the Troubadour in LA, this really cool club. And all of a sudden it was just, you know, hundreds of people dressed up in outfits, in Green Man outfits, and, you know, the, you know, D's dress from the show, and people dressed as trolls and all this amazing stuff. And I was like, oh shit, like there are a lot of people out there who really like this and are invested. And it was just a chance to see that the show was really doing well. So that's probably the one that's closest to my heart.
The bloopers with Gladys in that episode have always made me laugh, maybe more than anything. Speaking of, like, I believe It's Always Sunny has the funniest blooper reel maybe ever. Is there a scene that stands out to you as being the hardest to get through without some people breaking? For me, I think the one, whenever I watch the blooper reel, the scene where it's Glenn and Charlie in the police station during the Shusher episode.
Yes, yes.
It took like 15 takes to get through that one bit.
Yes, Shushing episode was a particularly good one. I do remember that police station one. And I would say, just, you know, any scene with Charlie, you know, is hard to get through because he's incredibly funny, but he also breaks a lot. He's sort of our Bill Hader, I guess. And you definitely have to go back and kind of like, you know, pick it up sometimes. And he would also, he'd be like, no, I'm good. I got it. You know? And he never did. Like he would always still be laughing while saying that he was getting ready to go again. But they're brilliant. I mean, that show is so much fun to work on because, you know, there's a lot of improv. The scene, you know, it's all well written in advance, and those guys, you know, are great writers as well. And so it has it sort of an improv feel to it, even when it's been written. But then when you're shooting it, all those jokes, there's just so many riffs and different versions, and scenes end up getting really long as things, you know, are played with, and then we kind of eventually collapse it back down a little bit, tighten it up. But those scenes are so funny to watch, and like the cameras are all handheld, right? So, you know, a lot of the takes are ruined because the camera guy is like laughing and it's going, so it's just a blast to work on. And those guys are geniuses. Yeah.
I feel like that does lead to good improv though. Like that once there's one, I'm not sure if this was one of your episodes, but there's an episode where like they're walking and Charlie just adds in a line where he's like, yeah, they just don't get us, man. And like, Then Rob just start cracking up, and they're like, "Oh no, we got to add that now. We got to add that now." I think they said in the blooper reel, but just it's good improv. That's the good. It makes the I feel like the episode better when it's a more organic joke, almost even. You know?
Yeah. There was one episode in particular which is all in the bar called Charlie McDennis, and it's about like a game.
Oh yeah,
and it's a brilliant episode that we shot basically to be super cheap and fast because we needed to pay for all these other more elaborate episodes. And it ended up being one of my favorites. And I think, is often on the list of popular episodes. But that one is just full of bloopers because just them in the bar goofing around playing games leads to absurdity constantly.
Danny DeVito in the dog cage. It's such a good one. Yeah.
Reminder, consultant out on Amazon Prime Video February 24th. We have to dip into Marvel a little bit. WandaVision, massive success. Directed EP, like you were a big, as massive a part of that process as it gets. And it was the first Marvel show out of the blocks, but it wasn't supposed to be, right? It was supposed to be Falcon Winter Soldier, right?
Yeah.
Did that terrify you a little bit when they moved Falcon Winter Soldier? Because I'm not saying that show's vanilla, but it's significantly more similar to the rest of Marvel than WandaVision was. And I'll never forget, Ken, Jack, and I got the screeners for WandaVision, and we sat and I watched it at like 2 o'clock in the morning. Oh. And I'm sitting there. There's that one moment in the first episode where it's that first one where things kind of break and you're like, whoa. And I'm just like, I looked around my apartment. I'm like, this is a little horrifying. Actually, like, what the fuck is happening? But for you, like, we're open to that. Were you there? It is. We got the tray. Yeah,
those are great. Yeah.
Was there a moment when they moved that other show that you're like, shit, we're the first series? That's a little daunting.
It was. You know, I mean, it made sense to start with Falcon and Winter Soldier because it's such an extension of the sort of the what was happening in the theaters. You know, this sort of big scale epic adventure story made sense, but. They had so much trouble with that shoot, just with like earthquakes and weather events and COVID delays and all that they just couldn't be ready for their delivery. So, you know, we got the call and it was incredibly exciting. And in retrospect, I'm really glad that it worked out. But yeah, there was definitely a moment of like, uh-oh, here we go. Because we were sort of the Twin Peaks of Marvel. You know, we were the weird bonkers little side experiment and we were never intended to be the first one out of the gate. So. But in retrospect, you know, it made a lot of sense. And I think, you know, here was this show that was really a love letter to television. So Marvel, the maker of giant, amazing cinematic experiences, is now coming to television with a love letter to TV, which made sense, you know. And I think it worked out well the way, you know, it's supposed to, I think, in retrospect. Yeah.
You've talked a lot about the show. We're not anywhere near the first. We're fairly far behind. I'm talking to you about the show. But you've talked about subverting expectations. The Ralph Boner thing, I know, kind of landed how you guys wanted it to with Evan Peters' character. Is that kind of the exciting thing about doing MCU projects? And there are these bigger projects, and I know you have the one with Apple TV Plus with Godzilla. Like, you have these other big projects. Is it the idea that you're like, damn, I can maybe do something a little different? Take something that's so known and so loved, but maybe just turn on its head a little more than they expect.
Yeah, and I think Marvel's been doing that for a really long time, and that's a testament to Kevin Feige, who's fearless, and he knows that, you know, people are really excited about these characters, but he also loves playing with genre and tone and style. And, you know, Winter Soldier, the movie, you know, Captain America Winter Soldier is a great paranoid spy thriller, you know, and Thor Ragnarok is a brilliantly absurdist comedy, and Guardians of the Galaxy and all that, they really have taken big swings. And I think WandaVision clearly was a big swing, and Loki, and they really enjoy finding ways to take this material and just taking it places you've never been with them. And I'm excited about my next project and trying to do the same thing and just keep people surprised, you know.
You guys in Loki, we've had Michael Waldron on here a bunch, so we've talked about the big swings. Well, Waldron, we'll call Waldron a friend of the podcast.
He's definitely a friend.
That's what
he's
we'll like call
three-time
him.
Guest. Yeah.
He's a friend of mine. I love that guy. He's a brilliantly talented writer.
But you mentioned the other one. You have, I don't know, I'm not trying to, not that I'm telling you anything new. I'm not trying to dial the pressure up to 11 on you, but I mean, holding the keys to Fantastic Four has to be, all right, it's, I feel like you kind of have to have the like, all right, let's go mindset, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is obviously the sort of direct opposite to WandaVision, which was the thing no one expected and kind of didn't know much about, versus, you know, a beloved property that's had a few film adaptations and, you know, they've been around since the beginning. The Silver Age of Marvel saved Marvel, the Fantastic Four You know, that's where so many great characters were launched, like Black Panther, and they would lead to, you know, so many other great teams after that. So, yeah, it's, but I love those characters. I've loved them since I was a kid. You know, I was first a Spidey fan, and I kind of found Fantastic Four through Spidey, because Spidey and Johnny were buddies, and then Spidey joins the Fantastic Four every now and then, and so I got to know that world, and I just love them. I love that, you know, there are so many stories about the family you find, right? The Avengers is the family you find, Star Trek Enterprise, the family you find. Fantastic Four is just straight up family, right? I mean, they are family. They are stuck with each other. They love each other. They hate each other. It's, you know, it's really a wonderful canvas to paint with. And that's, you know, that's what makes me so excited about it.
I love that. We want you to say just out loud so that we can social clip it, John Krasinski will not be in Fantastic Four. And then we will definitely edit it in your move not, and then get it to go viral everywhere.
No comments on any of that.
I know, we always say this whenever it's a Marvel person, that we have Kevin Feige with a shotgun, like off camera, just like waiting. But we do have a game for you. We want to essentially, let's call it like a gamble. It's kind of like a gamble, right? It's like we're gambling to cast Fantastic Four. So you just, all you have to do is pick a number 1 through 10. I have 5 different pools of actors. Depending on what you pick, it is going to cast Fantastic Four.
You're contractually obligated to make these your people too.
Yes, yeah, that's also a fact.
Oh man. All right. Number 8. I pick 8.
Okay. Number 8. And this is for Mr. Incredible, by the way, just to get, it's going to go down the list. Okay. Mr. Incredible. Your Mr. Incredible is going to be Walton Goggins.
Okay. All right.
Right off the bat. That's pretty strong.
Yeah, I like that you said Mr. Incredible. It'd be Mr. Fantastic, but the Incredible.
Oh, sure. Mr. Yeah, got fucking, it's the one DVD.
Hey, he is the biggest Incredible fan I've ever met. Brain. It is worth noting. Yeah.
It is another Fantastic Four movie that no one yet. Yeah.
Yep. Baby Billy, right. That's a great pick.
All right. Sue Storm. Pick 1 through 10.
6.
6. You have Helen Mirren as Sue Storm.
Okay. All right. All right.
It's a different take. It's a real different take.
In December. Okay. I like it. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So now we're just gonna hope that you pick Johnny Storm in, like, all right, let's see. Just pick the number. Pick the number.
Ian McKellen is Johnny Storm. 9.
9. Oh man, tough draw. Wallace Shawn is Johnny Storm.
It kind of works. I could see that. Yeah. Flame on.
Conceivable. Yeah. Flame on. His voice doing Flame on would be so funny.
That would be good. I like this. Okay.
All right. Now The Thing, 1 through 10.
Number 1.
Number 1. You have Martin Lawrence as The Thing. That's an interesting take on it.
Excellent. All right. I mean, this is actually how we do it at Marvel. You guys didn't know that.
Yes, that's what I heard. I did read that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, last one, Dr. Doom.
9.
9. Oh, this is big for me and Jeff. We love this already. James Corden is Dr. Doom.
Okay. Well, he's available now, right? His show's ending, so.
Yeah. That's why he canceled the show. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Duh. Yeah.
No, I can't comment on that, guys.
Obviously, you can't say anything, which we get. We know. You're not going to spoil anything for us because we wouldn't want to ruin your life. But we my only request, and then we're going to move on to our rapid fire to end it here. Can we just get The Thing in a football jersey drinking a Slurpee again?
Yes.
Just come on.
One time. Just as a little spit, like a little side for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll definitely think about that. Yeah.
That is the most like mid-2000 screenshot that you could probably find in a movie. Yep. Him just taking a Slurpee down.
Michael Chiklis in 50 pounds of prosthetics, just slurping football jersey, slurping on.
That's a rough one, getting up at 4 a.m. or whatever and putting that on every day. Yeah. You know, thank God now we have, you know, they put the dots on your face and it's and all that much easier.
We do have, like, we don't have enough time for it, but we do usually do like a 6-pack of questions. I think we'll narrow it down to 1. So let's do, if you could direct a season of any television series, past or present, what would it be?
Oh, White Lotus, because that is the best vacation/job in the entire world.
Almost sounds like, I mean.
What location, though?
Like, if you would have picked, like, I Love Lucy, you'd be out of the running. But, there's plenty of time to direct White Lotus, I feel like.
That's true. Yeah, no, I mean, I think there'd be a lot of scouting involved to find that location, right? I mean, I think you'd have to just go around and just really make sure you pick the right resort.
You're like,
what is doing right now? So he's just going around. No.
Yeah. You're like, we don't need a location scout. I can do it. Don't worry. We'll save money. I'll take care of all this. It'll be fine. Where would you pick if you could pick any place to you? You're on season three, let's say, of White Lotus. You could pick any location you want.
I know Tahiti sounds pretty nice, right? I mean, let's go down there.
Yeah. Was Hawaii too similar though?
Oh yeah,
as far as vibe go.
As long as it's not like Antarctica or something, nobody wants. Yeah, no resorts down there, right?
One of our coworkers, then we'll wrap up here. He was on his honeymoon, Roan, and he said that he came back and never seen White Lotus, watched White Lotus. He had been honeymooning at the location, and said he discovered a whole section of the resort he didn't know existed until he watched White Lotus. He's like, oh, what the fuck? He's like, that must have just been fake for TV. And he looked it up, and there was a whole thing he didn't know about. Like the whole week he was there. Dang it. So you got to do better scouting.
Yeah.
Consultant, Amazon Prime Video, thank you so much. Would love to have you back. You got enough projects, or maybe we will have you back. It'd be a blast.
It was a blast to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, and good luck, man. Appreciate it.
See you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, let's talk about 3Chi. We're now introducing the next evolution in ultra-pure cannabis products, Delta 9-0 by 3Chi. 3Chi Delta 9-0 products deliver a similar, yet smoother, stronger, and longer-lasting euphoria compared to traditional marijuana products. This high-quality and federally legal hemp-derived product raises the bar for what you should expect from a cannabis product in both effects and experience. We talk about 3Chi all the time. I am yet to try Delta 9-0, but I'm very excited for it. We use the products constantly. It's all around the office. I'm sure you can picture it in your mind with everything we got going on there. I've used the gummies, the cookies, the brownies, and also the Rice Krispie treat, which I talk about all the time, which, again, their edibles are incredible. They're so good. Get your exclusive 10% discount on 3Chi premium THC products by going to 3Chi.com. That's the number 3CHI.com. And use promo code Barstool10 to get 10% off your order today. Must be 21 or older to purchase. Please use responsibly.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Got nothing. Didn't even set up the idea we could even riff with him on Fantastic Four. Which they haven't even seemed to cast it. That's the thing. Like, it kind of came out this week that they haven't done it yet. So there's not much. What could he even say? But yeah, well, check out The Consultant. Totally worth watching. Like, completely worth watching. I haven't really heard anyone who's watched it has really enjoyed it. So worth the watch. Creed 3, the third in the Creed franchise, the 50th Rocky movie. Another new director. Creed 1, obviously directed by Ryan Coogler. Creed 2, directed by Stephen Capo Jr. This one directed by Michael B. Jordan, his directorial debut. Jonathan Majors, the big addition to the cast in this one. Playing old Damien. As the childhood acquaintance, and this is no spoiler, so I won't get too much into it, who was put away in prison, Michael B. Jordan's character, Creed, obviously Adonis, getting out of that, coming back to get some revenge, right the wrong, just like any Rocky movie, right? Right the wrongs of their past, get some revenge. A lot of hype for this movie. Some controversy, which we'll definitely talk about, the no inclusion of Rock himself, of Rocky. Whether that was a writing thing or also just contractual, and the fact that Rocky just doesn't like, Stallone doesn't like the producer anymore, basically says he's dead to him, won't be in the movie, won't promote it, won't even watch it. Won't watch the movie.
He wanted to buy the rights, right? And they wouldn't let him.
And just like, he's just not happy that he wasn't involved. It's kind of screwed up, and Stallone, by all accounts, is like a great guy. So it's kind of hard to not side with him there. Anyway. Debut for Michael B. Jordan. I loved this movie. All three of these movies are really close. I still love Creed 2. I did a rewatch of Creed 2. I love Creed 2. Creed itself, I actually like a little more than I think I did back then. I bumped my Creed score up the other day after rewatching Creed and then Creed 2. I love this. I think it was awesome. What a debut for Michael B. Jordan. I think there's some maybe mild. I'm only going to nitpick now. I'm not going to nitpick again. Mild. I think in some spots felt a little rushed. It felt a little fast. That'd be my only real critique. But, man, the way everything is shot,
I'm so glad I've become an anime fan because of this podcast, because the anime influence in this movie, and it's awesome. It's like very, especially the final fight. It is very fucking cool. Jonathan Majors is a superstar. Yes. I loved it. 92 out of 100. I think this movie fucking rules. I cannot believe this is a good movie. I can't believe the second one was beyond serviceable or passable. I can't believe the first one was good. And the fact that they made three of these that can stand as like a trilogy. Like, why are these – like, why are they good? Like, it's awesome. So, yeah, Creed 3, beyond the highest recommendation, badass movie. Just a badass movie. And did it dethrone the Blind Side as the highest grossing sports movie opening of all time? Did I see that?
Yes. I think it
did. Yes.
What a win. What a win for everybody there. That's huge. We love that. We love that. So, yeah, 90,000. I love Creed 3.
Yeah. $100 million opening weekend. Crazy.
Insane. I had a feeling it was going to do well. People like these movies, man.
I know. It's crazy. And like Jeff was saying, like, even the fact that like the first one is probably the second best Rocky movie other than Rocky is like insane. I still have Rocky 1 a little bit higher, but like the fact that it's in the conversation even is insane. But yeah, for me, I think that this is an incredible theater experience. Like one where like I've talked about it before, but like I went and saw this with like a screening group. So it's all critics. It's like the most boring people you can possibly imagine. They're all going
cut up and actually knocked out one of the critics in celebration.
Yeah. Dude, these people, like, they're always so boring sitting there on their fucking geeky notepads. And like they were going nuts. They were like, they were doing this shit, like going crazy and all this stuff. They thought it was so much fun. And like the audience is going insane. And like that part of it's great. The final IMAX fight scene, absolutely crazy. The anime moments like you're talking about, a lot of Dragon Ball Z and Naruto influence. Pretty good dialogue too. Which is something that I think surprised me just because of how they've lost the Stallone sort of influence on that, which Stallone, people forget, very talented screenwriter as well. He wrote Rocky. I think specifically Damian Needling, Tessa Thompson, like those dialogue moments I thought were awesome and obviously great cyclically for the plot. And it never really feels long. Like this is like a really long, pretty long movie. And like it doesn't really feel at any point like, oh, let's get to the point. Oh, this is going too long. So that all's massive, I think, in its favor. The only cons I have to are very more nitpicky things. I think there's a limit to how many new things you can do with a training sequence, but I think this is a weak one. There's a pretty weak training sequence going into the fight.
Yeah, I see that.
Like, Drago being back was cool, but like it felt like all the prelim stuff to the fight, like the time between Damien's heel turn to the fight, like all that stuff felt like it went by in a second. And like, I feel like there was a lot that could have been had in those moments as far as like characterization for everyone involved, really. And like, it felt like it just went by like that right into the fight, which is fine. But like, because they gave you so much more backstory in the beginning of the movie. But like, I feel like that could have been a great vehicle for showing you a lot of stuff with Donis and Damien and their past and all of that. But they went a different way with it, obviously. But other than that, awesome movie, great fight experience. I think it's the second best of the Creeds, only behind, obviously, the first Creed movie. I have it an 89 out of 100. Really, really liked it. It's one of the better boxing movies I think you can ever watch. And I think that for Michael B. Jordan being a rookie director to take some of the risks that he took, especially like that dream sequence in that final fight, like that's a risky call for a rookie director in a franchise as, I don't know, like with as much popular appeal as Creed. Like this isn't some auteur thing. Like this is a massive blockbuster boxing movie. And that was a big risk. I think it paid off in a huge way. Took some other risks as well, but man, really, really like this movie a lot. 89 out of 100.
Yeah, this movie's fucking this awesome. I mean, this was one of my top 5, top 10 theater experiences ever. I mean, it was a very fun experience. Yeah, I went Friday night, and it was a full house, not an empty seat in the whole theater. I mean, wild. People went nuts. When the training montage started, people started cheering. When the Stephen A cameo happened, when it cut to first take, people just started laughing. Like that was just hilarious. Like so great. When the people were going nuts during that anime sequence, which by the way, he completely ripped from, it's gotta be the Naruto Kakashi versus Obito fight. Like that is,
it's that. And
they're going to that shadow realm. Majin, and like it would like flashback to like when they were younger.
Yeah. And Majin Vegeta versus Goku, I think.
Watched Chris Stuckman's review of the younger he noted that he's like, it's cool to see though, like how much Michael B. Jordan's like addressed it though, like how much he's been open, like truly, like not just taking from anime, but being like, I did, like this is my influence, this is what I grew up with. So it is pretty cool to see that.
Yeah. The, Young Creed, apparently a big anime guy too. Did you see his room?
No.
Yeah, like, you didn't notice this? And then when they do the flashback, Young Creed.
Yeah. He had the Gundam
Naruto posters everywhere. And a Gundam poster. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the biggest compliment I'll give this movie, and then I'll turn it over to Chris and we'll talk about some more, but biggest compliment I can give it is this is the first time the Creed franchise feels like it's really standing on its own.
Yeah.
And part of that is unfortunately Sly not being involved. So you don't have the big Rocky hanging over the franchise, but also like there was a lot of decisions here that really made it distinct, especially in the way they shot the fights. Like that's something a Rocky movie would never have the balls to do, like break away from the formula and do something like that. And I respect the hell out of them for doing it because it paid off in spades.
Yeah. You know, one thing you bring up, and I love the first Creed. I think it's incredible. I think Stallone robbed of the Oscar for that. I'm not that crazy.
Criminally robbed.
Yeah. I'm not that crazy about Creed 2. I don't think it's a bad movie by any means. I really felt like the first one, you had this really unique opportunity to pass the torch along. And then with the second one, it very much felt like, okay, well, we're doing it again with Stallone. Yeah. And it's like, it's like a lesser version of the first movie. This fucking rules. This movie's awesome. Like it's just straight up, this is an enjoyable theater experience. It's an enjoyable movie experience. So Ken, Jack, you said it's relatively long, and it is, it's close to 2 hours, flies by, good pacing. And you know, the biggest star, obviously, you know, Michael B. Jordan is the main character, but he is the star of this as a director as well. Cause especially when your first film is a studio film like this, I feel like directors have a tendency to be very overwhelmed, or they just throw a million different things to the wall stylistically to try to stand out. It seemed like he was in complete control of this, all the way from the soundtrack to the cinematography. There's some really cool shots. Like the entrance scenes for the boxers are like, they give you chills. They're fucking awesome. Really the biggest standout though is the fight sequences. I said this in my initial review on Twitter. They reminded me of the flying sequences in Top Gun Maverick, where I'm like, I shouldn't be reacting to this shit. Like, I know it's fake. I know, but like I was reacting like people were punching me while I was watching this shit. So that's a credit to how much you care about the characters. It's a credit to the way that it's shot. These characters are fully realized, three-dimensional. Jonathan Majors, I think I speak for all of us here. Do we all like Ant-Man 3 a little bit less now? Because it's like,
dude, I said that. I think, who did I say that to? Did I say it to you, or did I say that to
my opinion of it, honestly?
I think I said that to you. Yeah, I think I said that to you, Gooch, right? I was like, it's going to make you like Ant-Man less because of how good and how much they unleashed Majors in it.
But that's the thing is with Ant-Man, with Quantumania, you had a really great actor playing just kind of a whatever villain with, you know, room to improve. Here, you have a great actor playing a really great antagonist. And not just a great antagonist, just a great character. Like, you get his motivation and his background. I think that's one thing that the better Rocky / Creed movies do a good job of, is that with a few exceptions like Drago in the fourth one, the antagonists aren't necessarily always antagonists. There's a reason for, you know, there's a method behind their madness. And I feel like you felt that here. And, you know, I don't know if we're on the spoilers, but truly for a film like this, my one complaint, and it's built into the fabric of these movies, it is formulaic. You know, it does have its cliches, but it earns its cliches. At the same time, I truly, by the time we got to the third act, I didn't know how the fight was going to end. Yeah. I was like, this could go the opposite of how I feel like it's going to go. And part of that is because Jonathan Majors is such a threat. If there's anything unrealistic about this movie, I feel like Jonathan Majors would beat the shit out of Michael B. Jordan in real life. You know, that's Now, again, Michael B. Jordan.
I think realistically, the only fight that that Creed should have won in any of these movies is probably the first movie.
Yeah. But 91. 91 out of 100 for me, guys. This is making my top 10 list at the end of the year. Go ahead.
You made me realize something, Chris. I thought it was a pretty good or well-paced movie considering the length. I thought this was a 2.5 hour long movie, and that's why I thought it was so short. No, I was like, damn, they paced this great.
did not overstay its welcome, told its story. And honestly, I forgot about a lot of Creed 2, actually. So I completely – and this is bad of me. I forgot about his daughter being deaf subplot. Mm-hmm. So, and then like 5 seconds in, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. She's deaf. I really like the way they're handling that. Like, I just think they do such a great job of walking a tightrope on a lot of areas where you feel like it could go wrong. And I feel like it's just another prime example of how Michael B. Jordan really had his finger on the pulse of this. Great sequel, great movie. Not surprised and very happy that it's doing well.
Dude, that, the tea party scene with his daughter, that was Michael B. Jordan going, I'm going to make myself the most attractive man to have ever lived. Like he's like, well, right, I'm going to be the most like in shape, like perfect body boxer. Oh yeah. And at home I have tea parties with my daughter. Oh, okay. Michael, chill. That kid actress was very good, by the way. And it could have gone bad. She was very charismatic, very funny. Loved her. The only thing, the only real complaint I'll have, I don't care about Tessa Thompson's storylines. They try to push him more in the second movie. And I like her as an actress, too. And I really liked her in the first movie. But her character just really, it doesn't move the needle for me at all. Like her music career, not interested in it. Like
I will say,
I get what they're trying to do. It's like a whole family thing.
That. Yeah, I think that was just the kind of reason it was even in this one was as a parallel to Damien. You know what I mean? Like it was sort of a vehicle to show what Damien was sort of feeling.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just could that's the only place I could like really nitpick is like that would probably be my least favorite part. Like just any of the Tessa Thompson stuff. I didn't like it in the second movie. I don't like it here. Their house was so sick, by the way.
Awesome house.
Such a cool house.
What did you
a fucking recording studio in the basement.
Here's a big question. What do you think about the death scene? Like, or the death of the character in general.
Of the mom?
Yeah, Felicia Rashad's character.
I can't remember which you guys made the complaint. A little rushed.
We had two very different takes from our coworkers, and I got to read them both.
Okay.
One is from a giant fan of The Cosby Show. One is not.
So Brandon Walker.
Brandon Kirk. Kirk said, they both liked the movie. I think Brandon liked it a touch more. Kirk is Kirk said he's like, if you set majors Oscars at 1.5 career, he's like, I'm going over. And I'm curious just when he starts doing non-big blockbusters. I'm curious like what happens next with
me. Oh, he's got Magazine Dreams coming up.
I've seen this before.
That's a very small movie.
He said the mom dying scene was almost incomprehensible and how awful it was. Brandon, on the other hand, just fucking loved it. What did he say? He said, and me watching Felicia Rashad die was awful. Cried like a baby. It's that's the Cosby, and that has not like that's the Cosby Show fan in him.
I thought it was a little strange when she started. It took me a second to realize she was talking to his father. It took me a second. I was like, what is she? And I was like, oh, she thinks she's speaking to Apollo. But for a second, I was like, what's going on here?
You know, I'll make this might be a hot prediction here. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I bet who's the studio that did this?
MGM, right?
MGM should be. They own that.
It wouldn't surprise me if they pushed to try to get majors a nomination for this.
I could see that. I could see that.
I'm not saying it'll happen. I'm not saying it deserves to happen. I'm saying that the movie's going to be a huge hit. So I think, you know, much like Everything Everywhere last March, there's going to be a carryover. People are going to still be talking about it. The guy's maybe the, you know, biggest up and coming movie star in the world right now. Movie that everybody loves. I could see it being one of those, hey, let's throw Creed 3 a bone nominations.
Well, also you want to have another reason why that's going to get pushed because that's right. Cause it's an Amazon movie because Amazon folded United Artists right into MGM. So that's right. So if Amazon's behind it, they'll definitely push it hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is awesome.
United Artists, formed by Charlie Chaplin, I think, right?
What a great movie.
Awesome.
I'm so happy when stuff pays off like this. Like, I've been hearing the hype on this movie for about a year now from the initial test screens, and they kept saying, like, oh, yeah, fucking crowds are going to love this movie. I was like, okay, I hope that's true. These scoops sometimes turn out very differently. Yeah. And it's just, everyone's – I mean, what is the Rotten Tomatoes score at for, like, the fans right now? It's got to be upper 90s, right?
They had fans fighting each other in the middle of the stadium.
Yeah.
That was a very funny video in France.
I do forget
fighting each other.
That he was in an A24 movie already. That was
Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Black Man. Yeah.
It was. He used Hostiles too, no? Like, he was really good in Hostiles.
Dude, yeah. his fighting style was so cool. Like, that, it was like a Mike Tyson, like, yes. Oh, that was so cool. Like, I love that they give the fighters, like, going back to the original franchise, this isn't a Creed thing, but, like, every fighter, every villain gets his own unique fighting style. Like, Clubber Lang was just a maniac. Like, Drago was, like, a technical feat. Ricky Hanlon had the big hook, right? That was his thing.
Yeah, and it's not just that. It's the fighting styles. It's the way things are shot. This movie just felt refreshing. I just
– It's good.
Your thumbs up.
What's your favorite walkout song
from this movie, or just any of it?
Yeah, from this one. I love the Felix.
I'll let you go because I feel like you're teeing something up. This is like a
no,
bit.
No, I really did love the Felix song. I loved it. Sick.
I will say, back to the training montage, though, this was, out of the three, this was my least favorite training montage song.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think in terms of the best montage, I think it's got to be the first Creed, but the ASAP Rocky
song. I like the second one had a good one, too, in the desert. Like, yeah, that was a cool training montage. Awesome.
But this was still good. Just like at this point, we're splitting hairs on what's the best of the best.
We never got the horns, like the Rocky horns. Like,
I don't think we got them in the second one either.
I think we did, unless I'm combining the two movies. I think we did in the last fight when he like punches the canvas over and over and over again. Though I just watched them back to back and my mind is melted. But
I wonder if that was a deliberate to like try and distance themselves from Rocky.
It might have been
because that's kind of weird. That like that's like not including like a, like the iconic like main like Indiana Jones theme in like an Indiana Jones movie.
Michael B. Jordan and Stallone are still on very good terms, I know.
I wonder if there's something involved with that
he's like, don't put it in, or
yeah, people in our comments have been like making up like every time I post about this movie, there'll be like people like making up things that just have not happened. Like, yeah, like Sly hates Michael B. Jordan, doesn't want like been doing this, like, don't go see this.
Like, that's one of my favorite tweets, is just like every single day on social media, someone will come on here and gaslight you into thinking something completely normal is wrong behavior. Like, to come on and be like, don't pick up your friends at the airport. If you do that, it means you're a loser. Or like, this guy wasn't in the next Creed movie, so he must hate Michael B. Jordan. It's like, no, that's just not true. Don't know what you're fucking talking about.
This was pretty great. What's the next thing we're going to review?
What's out?
That's
this
a good question.
Is Scream?
Cherry comes out the 17th.
Scream, baby.
Scream. 65. Is that a movie? Am I making that up? 65. Yeah.
65.
Yeah. The Adam Driver one.
That's the Sam Raimi.
No offense to 65, but I think Scream gets the nod here.
I'm excited for 65, especially after its nonstop promotion on the last UFC. Like, they just could not shut up about 65, and I'm like, okay.
We'll do both.
Wait, 65 doesn't come out until the week after. Scream comes out this week, and then it's Shazam 2 and 65.
Wait, is it not live this week?
Hell yeah.
It says March 10th.
65?
Yeah.
Oh, then I got the wrong date.
Yeah, March 10th. It did move, though. It was moved off the 17th.
I wouldn't hate not doing Shazam 2. Sick of seeing that fucking trailer. It's up there with the most like played. That's the most played trailer of all time, I think, at this point.
It's not supposed to do that well either. Apparently, it's tracking not to do very well.
Mm.
We're gonna have a real tough time on the 31st of March. Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves, Murder Mystery,
fairly good.
Tetris. You're not allowed to like it, by the way. You have to hate it.
Oh no, I'm done. I can't. I'm gonna have to do that. We'll have to do corner trill, basically.
If you like it?
Yeah. Well, the quarter trill, like, I'm gonna have to argue against it no matter what.
I'm disappointed that I kind of backtracked a little bit on it. Like, I have no spine. I should have stayed strong.
stayed strong for good old boys. Oh my god.
My favorite double movie that we're gonna have is April 5th, the Super Mario Brothers movie, and then Air, the Nike movie.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
That's a great back to back. Two wildly different types of movies. Yeah.
That'd be fun.
All right, that's it. Thanks to Matt Jackman. Go see Scream and go see 65. 65 is just not a good title. I'm sorry.
No, it's bad.
It's just not supposed
to, because it's 65 million years ago. Your feeble mind just can't understand the artistic process that goes into shortening that big a number.
That's it. Ken, Jack, Chris, Gooch, I'm Jeff DeLitt. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks. We'll be right back.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations. So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.